Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Product Marketing Insider podcast, which is brought to you by Product Marketing Alliance. My name's Bryony Pearce, and I'm the content manager here at PMA. This week's podcast is sponsored by the Product Marketing Festival. For those of you who haven't heard about it yet, it'll be coming to a screen near you between June 8th and June 14th, and we'll be featuring headline acts from companies like Amazon, Uber, Adobe, and Facebook, talking about everything from research all the way through to optimization. To get your ticket, just head over to the site festival.productmarketingalliance.com. To help establish and elevate the role of product marketing, we're on a mission to speak to 50 PMMs and pick their brains on everything from their journey into the industry, which teams they interact with most, what skills they believe are critical for the role, and a whole load more. To do just that, with me today is Andrew McCotter-Bickner, a product marketing manager over at Zoom Info, powered by Discover.org. So, let's get stuck right in. Welcome to the show, Andrew. Could I get you to kick off by giving everyone a bit of an intro into you, your role, and then Zoom Info?
Sure. So, I'm Andy McCotter-Bicknell, and I'm on the product marketing team here at Zoom Info, powered by Discover.org, which is still a very new thing for me to be saying, right? Because in that name, we have two brands. We have Zoom Info, and we have Discover.org. And back in February, we were two individual organizations that were actually competing in the sales and marketing intelligence space. So we each had our own individual platforms, and each of those platforms housed millions of different contact and company records that we would then sell to other B2B organizations to help them win more business and find, you know, their ideal customer profiles. So we were competing against each other pretty hard, but we both had, even though it was very similar products, we had kind of different claims to fame, so to speak. So on the Discover.org side, it was really all about quality. We had really high quality data, but we didn't have that much of it. Whereas on the Zoom Info side, they had a ton of data, a massive database, but not really as high of quality as Discover.org. So it really only made sense at the end of the day that we would come together and become one organization to kind of round out each other's weaknesses. And so that happened, you know, in February of this year. And, you know, once that happened, our teams got right to work to create a new combined platform to, that was really the focus, was all about quality, quantity, and depth. And then we only just released it this past September and rebranded. And so now we're Zoom Info, powered by Discover.org. So very exciting stuff.
And how did you find the process of going through that acquisition?
Oh, it was very, hectic and very exciting, very, yeah, I mean, all of the above, kind of like what you would imagine, kind of with the idea of having two, I would say, pretty decently sized organizations. It was about 500 employees from each individual organization coming together, kind of with different perspectives on how to market a similar solution. So it was definitely an interesting few months once we got to get to know each other. But at the end of the day, all of our goals were very much the same, right? We wanted each other to be successful. We wanted the product to be successful. And once we found that kind of common ground, it was really easy to kind of set aside those competitive feelings that we initially harbored, and we were able to work together really well.
And is that the first time you've gone through something like that?
So I know that we, so I've been at Zoom Info for about a year and a half now, and we went through Discover.org, I should say. Discover.org went through a similar acquisition of an organization called Rain King. And that was about, I think, 2016, maybe. And at the time, I think each organization was maybe 200-ish employees each. And so at the time, it was Discover.org versus Rain King. Discover.org acquired Rain King, and then it was Zoom Info. That was the big competitor. And so each organization grew to around 500 employees, and then that acquisition happened. So this was definitely the largest acquisition that I think Discover.org ever went through. But yeah, I would definitely say that it's happened before, just on different kind of scales.
And in terms of roles, kind of within product marketing and yourself specifically, have they changed much since this merger?
So it's actually been interesting. Like, because the company has essentially doubled, once we all came together in February, it was pretty much all hands on deck for this combined platform. So I think typically in product marketing, you're working on a number of different projects and releases, you know, new features, new updates. to the existing product that your organization has. But now we kind of had to set aside those individual projects to work on this one massive one for, you know, half a year. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely a big shift from what I was used to and what other folks on my product marketing team were used to as well. Mm-hmm. And so we're actually just now kind of getting back into the swing of being like, okay, well, now we have this really nice combined platform. How can we make it even better than when we first launched? And so we're getting back into that cycle of, you know, different individual updates and features and having different product marketers owning some of those things that we're going to market with. Mm-hmm.
And in terms of kind of geography, where are the two businesses based and how does that work?
Yeah, so that's another crazy thing that happens with mergers and acquisitions. So Discover.org is headquartered in Vancouver, Washington, which is just 15 minutes north of Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And ZoomInfo is headquartered in Waltham, Massachusetts. And I mentioned the ranking organization that Discover.org acquired back in 2016. They have offices in Bethesda. And then I think ZoomInfo acquired a company called Datanize back in 2018. And there they had offices like internationally. And so that's been another definitely a new kind of challenge when you go through these different mergers and acquisitions, is making sure that you stay organized and that you understand who's responsible for what. Mm-hmm. And luckily, I think our teams have been very good about communicating and staying organized and making sure that we're respectful of each other's time zones, you know, not scheduling meetings like when other people are going to sleep. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's definitely been something that we've had to learn as we've been going along.
Yeah. And then how does that look kind of now? Do you have, is it like weekly catch-ups, bi-weekly catch-ups, and is it in the diary or is it just kind of ad hoc?
Yeah. So it's pretty much, we have like weekly different kind of, pass down meetings just between different departments. And so, like I would say that, between, cause obviously you have different conversations from, like you would say, product management, and luckily product management is all, US based. And so we would have, weekly kind of meetings between product management and product marketing. And then on the product marketing side, we have different meetings that we then translate those same messages to, the broader marketing and customer facing teams, which are luckily all US based. A lot of the folks that are internationally based, they are like in operations or in web design. And so, there's not much like, you don't really have to schedule as many meetings with them. You can usually just write up an email and you can send that over. And then they can just pick it up and then make sure that they can send it to you the next day and you can check it over and so on and so forth.
Okay, sounds good. And then going back to kind of pre-ZoomInfo, what did your career path look like?
So it's honestly very similar to what it is now. I would say that like the actual, like my outlook on product marketing has just really solidified with you know, this merger, I guess you could say. Just because Discover.org was very, very deliberate about the things that they were going to market with. Mm-hmm. And that was what I think why Discover.org saw so much success historically. And so it was that deliberate intention of seeing something that the market needed and then delivering it. Mm-hmm. And I think that we brought kind of that magic into the ZoomInfo powered by Discover.org platform. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's that same kind of like reading exactly what the market wants, whether that's through like a win-loss reporting, or that's through like, you know, just making sure that you're keeping your ear to the ground with different analysts that are talking about the industry, and then making sure that you just deliver on the things that pretty much your buyers are looking for, mm-hmm. kind of at a rapid pace.
Yeah. Awesome. And then going back to the start of your career, what is it that made you want to become a product manager in the first place?
Yeah, so I actually started out in sales, kind of like in an SDR type of role. Mm-hmm. And I went to school for marketing, but, you know, it was sales was just kind of my, how I entered into the marketplace, how I started my career. And then once I saw Discover.org, I was like, oh my God, like this tool would be so great for me to use, like just as a salesperson. And it's something mm-hmm. that I think a lot of organizations are missing, and it could really benefit so many different people just in that sales process. And mm-hmm. so, luckily they were looking for a product marketer when I found them, and I was able to kind of switch my career path, away from sales. But I've definitely been leaning on that sales perspective quite a bit as a product marketer to make sure that, you know, once we're building content or collateral or like writing copy, that we can talk about it in a way that still respects sales mm-hmm. and respects that whole process, because at the end of the day, they're the ones who are making the revenue.
Yeah. Well, I guess as well, do you find, having come from that background, do you find it easier to translate the benefits and kind of get your points across from that side?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I definitely get, you know, I think that's really important for anyone in product marketing, is to have that open line of communication with sales. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's so easy to get stuck in like kind of that like repetitive loop of just kind of like talking about marketing type stuff and like, oh yeah, this makes sense to me as a marketer. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, the people who are talking to the customers or the prospects, they're the ones who have such great insight as to like what other people are looking for. And so as long as you have like that communication with your customer facing teams, I think those product marketers or whoever's building the content or the messaging, they're certainly much better off.
And how do you find it? Because I know it's a bit of a problem for some product marketers, extracting that kind of information from the sales teams and the customer facing teams can be quite tough. How does that work for you?
Yeah. So, and honestly, I would say that that's one of the things that I've tried to, really build up and strengthen like within myself. It's, because as I said, I started out in like an SDR role. So I wasn't really giving any demos per se, but I was still talking a lot to, people who would be using potentially the product that I was selling at the time. Mm-hmm. But now in this product marketing role, we have these weekly kind of, sales or customer success meetings where we're pretty much pitching everything that's new that's coming into the platform or into our integrations. And it's those times where I'm really able to see what the sales teams need in order to be successful. And so like when I first came in product marketing, you know, because I was completely new, I was trying to kind of shape my conversational, like my language, into something that would be more marketable or like marketing specific. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't get very much, very great feedback from a group of salespeople when you're talking like specifically about marketing type stuff. And so that's definitely been something that I've had to really shape, as I've been in product marketing, is that, you know, even though we all have the same kind of thing that we're pitching, mm-hmm. you have to be able to pitch it in different ways so that it benefits people in their own respective field.
Yeah. Awesome. And then if there is such a thing, what does a standard day in your role look like?
Yeah. So, I'm sure you get that same reaction to whenever you get that. Yeah. Right. So, I would say definitely, when February rolled around earlier this year, then it was pretty much all about this combined platform. It was creating the messaging for it and making sure that it made sense. Which again was like quality, quantity, depth of data. Okay. So we needed to make sure that any content that we were making surrounding the combined platform was really focused around those main themes. And I really think that, my product marketing team knocked it out of the park with that. Like we really honed that message and made sure that it was consistent across all content and collateral and messaging. So that was the big thing. It was every day we're working on the combined platform to make sure that everyone understands the messaging and make sure that all of our customer facing, representatives were well informed of the platform itself. Mm-hmm. So now that's shifted gears quite a bit ever since we released the platform. We're still, kind of maintaining all the content creation and like filling in any gaps that might have appeared since we launched. But now we're starting to go back into that cycle of like, okay, we've kind of done the data piece. We really explored and made sure that we, again, filled in all of our gaps and like all of our weaknesses. So like, what's the next step? Mm-hmm. And so now what we're trying to do is we're trying to figure out, okay, let's make and market products that make that data actionable. And so it's trying to take kind of a new spin on the main product that ZoomInfo powered by Discover.org has unveiled to the market. And so we're trying to, again, we're taking exactly like what we built with the combined platform and we're trying to build off of it with our own respective projects now.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And then just goes back to the messaging aspect of it. What would you say some of the main positioning and messaging challenges you faced were after kind of announcing the combination of the two brands?
Yeah, exactly. So there's, like I said before, like we had those individual strengths and weaknesses between the two organizations, Discover.org being like really high quality data, ZoomInfo being a lot of data. Mm-hmm. And so as you can imagine, with each of those organizations, the sales department specifically, when they're talking to customers, they have these kind of cadences that they have been leaning on for years and years and years. And so one of the challenges was just making sure that our talk track and, you know, our messaging that we pushed to the sales team was more, was that it, you know, that it covered pretty much all of the bases that the new platform laid down the foundation for. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just the quality, it wasn't just the quantity, it was the quality, quantity, and depth. And so I think that's really important when you're putting out any sort of game-changing kind of platform or product. It's that it's changing not just the way that other people are looking at the product or the industry, but it's changing the way the organization itself is looking at that product or service. So that was one of the things that we really needed to make sure we were hammering home. So we did a lot of internal training on not just like walking through the platform, but like, how do you position this thing and how can you tailor it so that you're positioning it to the customer in the way that they want it.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And then in terms of your go-to-market process, has that changed much since the merge?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say it's changed too much. I mean, so it comes down to two main ways that we receive our information for like what's coming down the pipe. So I mentioned that the product marketing and customer marketing teams here at ZoomInfo, we conduct quarterly win-loss churn reports. And so we'll send different surveys out to different, again, customers or prospects that have gone through that process, and they'll let us know, you know, like what went well, what didn't go well, and then what maybe were they looking for in the product that we didn't have. And so we'll get that information, and we can feed that to our product management team, and they can determine, you know, if it's something that can realistically can be spun up. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we'll also, like I said, we have like a group of really well-informed executives who are trying to kind of survey this industry of sales and marketing intelligence and determine, you know, what's the next best thing that this platform can do or that people can use this platform for. And so we'll usually either get some sort of information from the win-loss churn reports or mm-hmm. we'll get some sort of information from our executives and then move with that.
Okay, sounds good. And then how far do you typically try to plan in advance?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
How far do you typically try to plan in advance?
Oh, yeah. So that's another really funny kind of funny question, just because in February, obviously, we were planning 6 months ahead of time, right? And so like we had a lot of time and we were really heads down working on it. But then once that happened, we didn't really have as much time to consider what we're going to do afterwards. And so now we're kind of in that mode where we're like, okay, now we can get back into the cycle of individual releases. And so right now it's like every 4 to 6 weeks, we have something new coming down the pipe. Yep. And, you know, we're preparing like really kind of like rapidly, and we're making sure that everything is buttoned up. And I think our goal is to be a little bit more, to have like some sort of more formal roadmap where it's like, you know, you can see a couple of months out. But at this moment, you know, just given the scale of the release that just occurred in early September, we're trying to make sure that we can go to market with other really profitable features and products that people are looking for, and making sure that they know it's not just the new platform, but we're going to continue to build on that success.
Yeah, sounds good. And then in terms of your direct team, what does that sort of look like in terms of size and structure and roles?
Yeah, so when we were starting off, before any sort of acquisition, it was just a team of two, really. So it was myself and a manager. We were the product marketing team for Discover.org. And then once we came together, you know, we pretty much doubled in size. We were about a team of four. And then, I think we're, you know, we have a couple of open recs right now. And so it's been really exciting for me personally to get so many other product marketers just to be able to communicate and work with. Mm-hmm. Again, because like the number of releases that we have has pretty much doubled or tripled since Q4 of 2018. And so obviously we need more support. And so, I would definitely say that, that having those other folks on the team will definitely help and make sure that we can be more organized and have more foresight down the road.
Yeah, for sure. And then in terms of teams outside of product marketing, like sales, product operations, for example, which departments mm-hmm. would you say you interact with most on a day-to-day basis? And what would you say your setup for them's like?
So product management, I would say number one is they're the folks that we usually get most of the new product and feature information from. And so I would say them number one, and that's usually who I'm going to ask questions or trying to get clarifying points from when it comes to existing products or things that are coming down the road. So they're number one. But then I would also say our sales enablement teams really have a strong presence with it, like with product marketing as well, because at the end of the day, they're really shifting into growing as well as the product marketing team here at ZoomInfo. So they're taking on a lot of the sales training, whether that's new hire or whether it's like the weekly releases. They're the ones who usually translate that to the sales teams now. And so, you know, whether it's us receiving the information from the product management team on a weekly basis, or it's us translating that information to the sales enablement teams in that same week, those are usually the two departments that we really spend the most time with.
And how does that communication sort of happen? So would you say it's more structured meeting in the diary type of thing, or random desk drops?
Yeah, I would say that for product management, it's definitely more formal, just because we have a really large and I really don't know how to explain it, but we have product managers really in so many different offices that it has to be more formalized in order to get everyone involved, you know, to make sure that all of the products can properly get laid out for us product marketers and anyone else who attends those meetings. And so those are definitely more formal. Whereas for sales enablement, I have a number of sales enablement teammates here in the Vancouver office. And so that's a little bit easier to just, you know, kind of ad hoc it and just make sure that they have what they need. But we do have weekly meetings with that team as well that we're able to work off with.
Okay, cool. And then in an absolute dream world, is there anything you change about those relationships to be better?
Honestly, no. I mean, so I think that when it comes to product management, I think that in order to have like that really succinct and descriptive, I don't know how to really say it, or detailed description of like everything that's coming down the pipe, I think that you need to have like that really strong designated time for releasing that information and messaging to product marketing. And so especially when the size of the team is considered. So the sales enablement team, you know, it's probably like 5 or 6 people compared to product management, which is well over a dozen people. And so when you consider that size, you know, you have to make sure that it's laid out way more formally than with the sales enablement team. So no, I wouldn't really say I would change anything about that.
That's a good position to be in.
Yeah, right.
And then sticking with product management, would you say there's a lot of crossover between the role of a product marketer and a product manager in ZoomIn?
So I would say that that depends on the organization. With ZoomInfo, there isn't as much crossover as I think other organizations. And that is actually kind of a new thing that changed. So when I was, when I initially got hired here at ZoomInfo, product marketing rolled up through the product department, and then that shifted when the acquisition took place, and now I'm on the marketing team. And so honestly, it's been good for me because I got the best of both worlds, and so I know how to talk with the product managers. But then at the same time, I know, like, you know, I can talk every single day with the demand gen team, customer marketing team, marketing operations. And so having that kind of dichotomy has really helped me for sure be able to talk to either audience and make sure that I can give and get different information that will benefit everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And then what would you say the top 3 skills are that have helped you get where you are today?
Okay, sure. Yeah. So do you mind if I answer this in a way that it's kind of positioning my team? Because I think that, cool, because definitely when it comes to like this, this release that happened earlier in September, it was definitely like a team thing, and definitely want to make sure that they're highlighted. So organization number one, like as in like being organized. Again, with the acquisition that took place and like adding in like 2 or 3 new offices, it could be really easy to have that really mess things up, you know, and add a lot of like question marks to the process, to the typical go-to-market process that I was used to. But honestly, once like the first week was over and we realized what the goal was, which was to make a new platform, we all got super buttoned up and we made sure that all of the goals were laid out and that we were all aligned. And then like 2 months out before the release of the platform, we had like this massive Google spreadsheet where everyone on the marketing and go-to-market teams were a part of it. And it had like every single asset and collateral that we were building and that we were collaborating on. And we had who was responsible for it, who was a contributor for it. And then that all really helped once launch day came, because then we were able to like put forth so much supporting material for all of our different audiences. And so organization, I would definitely say number one. And then I think I mentioned this earlier, but being intentional, that's another thing that my team has been really good about. It's understanding kind of like what the platform or what the audience needs, and then making a deliberate choice to execute on that idea. So if we see something that our product is missing or that our audience might be missing from those win-loss churn reports, then we decide to take advantage of that information and then move forward with it. So I think that's very important. And also I would just say that being like friendly with each other, like even though it's kind of like a basic thing, it's super important for two organizations that are going through a merger or an acquisition of this size to keep in mind that if you're friendly with each other, that any sort of competitive ill will kind of feelings, those totally get tossed by the wayside. And I think that my team did a really, really great job of making sure that we were all super friendly with each other and that we recognized that we had the same goals at the end of the day. And this goes not really just for anyone going through a merger or an acquisition, but as a product marketer, you go through and talk to so many different departments. It's really a super cross-functional role. And so if you're friendly and you're approachable, then, you know, people can come to you and ask questions and then they'll be set up for success. And that ultimately sets the entire organization up for success. And then if you're friendly to the people who are feeding you information, they'll be more than likely to, you know, continue to work with you and make sure that you're set up for success. And so I'd definitely say it's like organization, being intentional and just being friendly.
And in terms of the cross-functional element of the role, would you say that's something you like about it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that I think I kind of touched on it already earlier, but like I think it's really easy for anyone in their own respective department to kind of get closed in on your perspective of what the organization means or what the product means. And without that kind of cross-functional element, it's really difficult to kind of see from other perspectives, like i.e. marketing versus sales. It's really tough for a marketer to really understand like what the customers are asking about and what their pain points are when it comes to the platform if we're not talking to the people who are talking to the customers.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that goes for anyone in any other role as well, you know. So I definitely think that that's an important aspect, not just for product marketing, but for anyone in an organization that's trying to understand the strengths and weaknesses of what they're going to market with.
Yeah, for sure. And then in terms of collateral, out of curiosity, how does that work for you? Does that sit within product marketing in terms of creation, or does that go over to marketing?
Yeah, so I would say that, and this is another thing I guess I should say has shifted a little bit. So with DiscoverOrg, we had one person in content marketing who was, you know, making the blogs and the ebooks. She did a great job. And once we moved and took on this ZoomInfo powered by DiscoverOrg title, we picked up like an additional like 7 or 8 content marketers. And so our ability to like pump out really good, relevant collateral and content has increased like crazy. And so, whereas that might have been something that, product marketing might have stepped in on, we now have a content marketing team that can help that. And so what we've really been doing lately is we've been building out different data sheets or positioning briefs for our reps. And then with that information, that kind of like high level information that we're feeding our reps and our marketing teams, they're able to take that information and then go and build, you know, different landing pages, different animation scripts or different ebooks, and kind of take what they see with that information and kind of own it.
Yeah. Awesome. And then outside of the recent merger, what does the process of introducing and influencing new products or features look like?
Can you repeat that question really quick?
Yeah. So outside of the recent merger that you've been through, what would the process of introducing a new product or feature look like?
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So it would really look like, I mean, kind of how I described, we would get that information from our product management team. So lately, what the big theme has been, it's actionable data. It's not just, you know, making the data a little bit better. It's been actionable. Mm-hmm. So we would get that information from our product management team. And then the product marketing team, myself and my coworkers, we would build all of the respective collateral for that launch. And then we would make sure that we share that with all of our other supporting teams to make sure that everything is built out. You know, we have landing pages, we have supporting video, we have different data sheets, position brief, white papers, case studies, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. And then when it finally comes down to it, about 2 weeks before launch, we usually create some sort of course in our content management platform. And every single rep has to go through this course and they read up on the different collateral that's been created. Mm-hmm. And then they take a little quiz and they pass and they're pretty much certified to go ahead and pitch that new product. And so that's pretty much the process of going to market with like our new feature rollouts that have been going on the past few months.
Okay, awesome. Sounds good. And yeah. Then in your opinion, what, if anything, do you think needs to change about product marketing?
Ooh, let me think. I think the typical thing that I see organizations struggling with when it comes to a consistent, like a KPI or something that you can tie to a product marketing performance. And I think that in most cases, organizations just kind of have like a checklist of like, okay, so product marketers are responsible for, like messaging or positioning. So like, did they create messaging or positioning? Thumbs up. Good. And like, that's great. But in most cases, like there's not really a way, through that process to see if that's successful or not. And so whether that's tying revenue into a new product launch that a product marketer or team is responsible for, or, tying MQLs or number of demos booked, I think that that should be the more consistent thing that other organizations are tying to their product marketers' performance. And I think that would definitely allow product marketers to be able to, like I said, have more metrics behind their performance and make sure that they're successful.
Yeah, sounds good. I guess that would help as well. I feel, especially having had a few conversations about it in the podcasts, one big thing about product marketing is people having to justify the value of the role. Maybe something like that would help to kind of eradicate those barriers.
Oh, I know. Absolutely. And that's it's something that as a combined organization that we're starting to roll out, and it's been awesome so far, kind of having like that ownership and being able to really tie some sort of metric to your performance. It's definitely, I would definitely recommend that for other organizations as well.
Awesome. Penultimate question. Having just been through this recent merger, what are your recommendations for any other organizations that are going through something like that?
Yeah, let me think. So I would definitely say just to make sure that depending on the scale of the merger acquisition, right? So if it's a large one, then I would say that make sure that your messaging and positioning is consistent and that all ties back to your ultimate value prop. And so for us, the positioning messaging had to shift slightly into like this trifecta of quantity, quality, and depth. Mm-hmm. And everything that we came to market with was consistent with that message. And so just make sure that whatever the merger was, that it's beneficial to that singular message that, that you're putting forward.
Yep. Sounds good. And then final question, if there are any new or aspiring product marketers listening to this right now, what would your advice to them be?
I would definitely say just make sure that, that number one, that you're approachable and that you're able to help and say yes to as many things as you can. And to just make sure that you're willing to sit down and learn and not be afraid to make mistakes. Because when it came, like I said, when I first started in product marketing, I wasn't exactly sure of what the role was between sales and marketing and product marketing. And so it's taken a lot of just getting back up and trying a new kind of thing, a new way of presenting a message to the sales team or to the marketing team, and sometimes they don't stick. And so you just have to make sure that you understand from your organization's perspective, like what's needed out of product marketing. Because I think it's different for everyone. And so it took me a little bit to kind of hone that perspective. But you know, like I said, as long as you're able to kind of get back up after you've tried something, if it doesn't work or it works, and you're able to come to your own conclusion of how product marketing can be successful, then I think you'll be much better off.
Okay, awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time today, Andrew. It's been really interesting speaking about the merger in particular.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Awesome, thanks. For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening, and if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Before we leave you to get on with your day, if you want to get involved, here are a few ways you can. If you're a product marketer and you want to come on the show to speak about your day, a specific topic, or just your role in general, that's one option. If you want to flex your podcast hosting skills, being a guest host is another. And finally, if you or your company want to sponsor an episode, there's a third. Thanks again, and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.